This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this snowy Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Michael Kay and Peter Rosenberg, Don LaGreca, will join us a little bit later on. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, obviously, are your responsibility. Boy, a lot of sports news happening.
Go ahead.
We'll get to all of it. The news we just found out right before we went on the air with the soft open is JT Realmuto has signed a $115.5 million five-year contract with the Philadelphia Phillies, and that's good for $23 million a year, and that's the highest average annual value that any catcher has ever gotten.
Wow.
And the previous highest was Brian McCann with the Yankees, but this is 36% higher than that $85 million deal. So now with the Phillies not breaking the payroll down and selling off their parts, there are four really good teams in the National League East. The Nationals are reloading. The Braves are very good. They signed two good pitchers. The Mets with the trade for Lindor. And now the Phillies bringing back Realmuto. And the Marlins are a team that's on a come. That's not an easy division. And because the players have turned down the expanded playoffs, it's not going to be easy to get into the playoffs in the National League. There are a lot of good teams. Which leads us to the other story that's out there is that the Mets have made an offer for Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer coming off a Cy Young Award year, 60-game season. And all the word out there, Peter, is that he wants a deal with a higher average annual value than Gerrit Cole. I don't think he's going to get it. I don't think he's that pitcher. So $36 million a year, he's not that pitcher to me. You know, our very own Chris Carlin said today on Twitter, you know, Trevor Bauer has been in the big leagues for 6 years. He's been good for a year and a half. There have been some bad years in there. Now, he had a tremendous season last year in an abbreviated, truncated season because of COVID. So anybody who thinks he's going to get a contract like Gerrit Cole got, he's not. And if he holds out for that, I don't think he's going to get it. Now, you could say, well, what if the Mets signed him for 1 or 2 years for $72 million? I guess you could do that. But still, you're going to give him a higher AAV than Jacob DeGrom? That's a little risky. Jacob DeGrom, if he's not the best pitcher in baseball, he's certainly in the discussion. I don't know if Trevor is in that discussion just yet, but the Mets have made an offer. No one seems to know what it is. We'll tell you if anything develops. We have everybody working on it. If Jeff Passan finds out, we'll get to him as well. But they do have an offer out to Trevor Bauer. Who else? Not quite sure. I've heard that the Angels are interested. I've heard that the Dodgers could be interested at the right price. But I don't know if $36 million is the right price. Because at the start of this, Trevor Bauer said, hey, I'll take a one-year deal and move forward. But he's kind of come off that now. I think he wants some security as well. So we'll see if Trevor Bauer makes the Mets even better because, you know, getting Lindor was a huge get for the Mets. But how different are they than last year's team? Other than that Marcus Stroman opted out and this year he's going to play. So we'll see. Lindor's a huge addition and makes them better. But there are a lot of rumors out there that I've heard that the Mets are in play on Chris Bryant. The Cubs' third baseman, they have to make a trade for him. So if they get Bryant, they're going to be over the 210. And if they get Bryant and Bauer, they're going to be the biggest payroll in baseball, which would run counter to what Steve Cohen said when he bought the team, that they're aiming at 210 and he doesn't want to spend like a drunken sailor. So they've added Lindor, Carrasco, James McCann, so they're much better at catcher. And also they added Trevor May in the bullpen. We'll see if they add Bauer or Bryant. Fun time. So there's a lot out there. And if you're a Met fan, you're waiting anxiously to see if, in fact, you can get in on the Cy Young Award winner, which means that you would have the last three Cy Young Award winners in the National League on your staff.
Wow.
Because DeGrom won two in a row and then Bauer. And DeGrom certainly didn't have a bad year this year, Peter.
Which becomes interesting because then you're talking about the Mets basically being close to the prohibitive favorite in the National League, no?
I think it's still the Dodgers. I think it would be the Dodgers and the Padres, but you know the Mets would be in the discussion. You're right. If they get Bauer, you'd have to rearrange that discussion. Maybe they move ahead of the Padres. You know, the Dodgers certainly haven't taken a hit since winning the championship. I saw an amazing stat yesterday that, you know, they look at projected WAR, wins above replacement of the mm-hmm. roster that you've put together. And the Yankees' projected WAR, I believe, was 51.7, which is 5 WAR points higher than the Dodgers. So everybody's nervous about what the Yankees have done. You know, they're rolling the dice with a lot of these pitchers, and boy, are they ever. But the projected WAR for the Yankees is higher than the projected WAR for the Dodgers. So I know Yankee fans want a lot of sexy moves, big-time moves, this, that. Well, maybe they didn't need it. Maybe the people that crunch the numbers in the front office go, you know what, we don't need to make that many drastic moves. We've got a projected WAR of X, and the Dodgers have a projected WAR of Y, and the Padres have a projected WAR of Z. So we'll see. All right, we wanted to start today with our good old Jetsies, Peter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mel Kiper Jr. does several mock drafts before the draft. And the Jets, of course, have the number 2 pick in the draft. So Mel was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. You could hear them every Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 right here on 98.7 ESPN. And Mel said if he was running the Jets, that he would keep Sam Darnold. So listen to Mel here.
Yeah, I think when you look at the Jets, the Deshaun Watson talk for Miami or the Jets, if you can make that move and give up that some of that draft capital and get a franchise, defined franchise quarterback, not one who may be, but one who already is, and you're in a division with Josh Allen, that for Miami or the Jets would make a lot of sense. And obviously Deshaun is better than Sam Darnold. So I get the reason why the Jets, I don't certainly understand why Miami would do that. I would do that. But if you can't, if Deshaun Watson remains in Houston or goes somewhere else, if I'm the Jets, I'm sticking with Sam Darnold. I'm not drafting Zach Wilson or Justin Fields. And there's no reason to get off Sam Darnold and say we're going to move away. Why? He'd had nothing with the Jets to work with, and he has showed flashes at times of being a really good quarterback in this league.
Now, do you agree with that? Now, obviously, Trevor Lawrence is a no-brainer. You would take Trevor Lawrence and deal with Sam in whichever way. You know, you'd have to trade him. But do you think he's better than the other two young quarterbacks that are coming out of the draft? And the guy who makes his living projecting that feels that he is. So all of a sudden, Peter, if you keep Darnold, that opens up a world of possibilities. You could take the wide receiver from Alabama. You could trade the number 2 and get several picks and, you know, maybe fill up other spots as well. So there's a lot of avenues you could go if you're convinced that Sam Darnold is better than the two quarterbacks that remain after Trevor Lawrence. But I do like what Mel said because it lends credibility to what he said. Hey, the bottom line is this. If you can get Deshaun Watson, you get Deshaun Watson.
Well, so it kind of simplifies things to some extent. Yeah, you try everything you can to get Watson. It's hard for anyone to be upset with that. I mean, I'm sure Sam wouldn't love it, but it's kind of hard to knock someone who wants to get Deshaun Watson. And if that's not the case, you move forward with Sam. It does simplify things. And I can envision a world in which they're able to go out and get someone like Devontae Smith, a complete offense-changing receiver. You have a new head coach, an apples and oranges different attitude and approach between Gase and Saleh.
I think
so
you
got
to go apples and wrenches because they're both not a fruit. They're so
personality-wise, you know, we don't know necessarily the ins and outs of the football of it, but personality-wise, it's apples and skyscrapers.
Right.
I'm not going to lie, I can picture a world in which Sam flourishes. And if you're not sure about anything out there except Deshaun Watson, and you're not going to be able to get Trevor Lawrence anyway, I think the answer does get simple. I mean, are you telling me you would go through the whole kit and caboodle to try to get a Matt Stafford or someone else? Or do you take what you have, the assets you have, the pieces you could potentially get from that draft pick, and give Sam another shot? I personally would. I mean, I wanted Sam to be considered for Washington. That's how I feel about him. So it's going to be interesting. I wish someone could completely articulate, though, Michael, why it is that Darnold is better than he was on the Gase Jets. Can that be articulated? What did we not see?
I guess the way the people articulate is that Gase is so bad that he ruined the guy. But he wasn't great on Todd Bowles' team either. He was okay. I think he took a step back this year. The injuries, the mono the year before, it all hurt him. But did Gase really poison him that much? Well, the people that get paid for this stuff probably look through the tape and see through what we see and see deeper than what we see, and they see something that's better. Now, the money aspect also comes into play. Remember when we had Joe Douglas on a couple times ago? The fact that Sam, after this coming season, has to be paid $25 million for his fifth year, that affects everything. If you selected Justin Fields, boom, you reset the clock, and he's on a rookie contract in year one. And then you can spend money on other parts. But we'll see. Now, Keyshawn Johnson is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour, but today on his show, he said he would not take the wide receiver, Devontae Smith, at 2.
It'd be great for the young man to go at number 2 overall, but I don't see it happening just because the Jets have other holes that they need to address other than the receiver at number 2. And when you look at draft picks at the receiver position, no matter how dynamic you are in college, they start taking the measurables when you start to get that high. I mean, he's the best college receiver I've ever seen. He's smaller than me. He's smaller than Megatron. He's smaller than Julio Jones. Big receivers are at a premium when you start talking top 5 pick. When you start getting into smaller statue type players, they tend to go out of the top 5 because it's just the body type.
So Keyshawn's not saying that because of his talent and you don't take a wide receiver too. He's saying that once they do the measurables, Peter, that they're going to start peeling back the onion and say, well, he's too small. He's smaller than most great wide receivers. And I look at him, and I see a very slight guy. He's super, super fast. But he's going to come over the middle. Let's say he works out of the slot at some point, comes over the middle. He's going to get crushed by a linebacker. He's a little guy. So you have to play that into it. What's the durability factor for the number 2 pick in the draft? When you could take the offensive tackle, who might be there for 15 years alongside Mekhi Becton.
Well, he's 6'1". Right now, Devontae Smith is 6'1", 174. Robbie Anderson, 6'3", 190. But you wouldn't be surprised if Smith, by the time he gets to the league, is closer to 190.
But Robbie Anderson wasn't a first round, but certainly not the second pick in the draft. I mean, Devontae Smith could end up being a very good player. But at a number 2, you certainly want a sure thing. And because he's so slight, is he a sure thing? He's so good, though.
That's
but
the thing.
You know how they do it in football, Peter, with all the drafts. They overanalyze. It's paralysis by overanalysis. It just is. So they'll look at the size of his hands. They'll look at his first step. They'll look at how much he weighs. He's small. You look at him and he's small.
I wonder what the small – yeah, that's true. I mean, Robbie Anderson was an undrafted free agent. How often do you get someone this highly touted at 6'1"? But listen, if you have that kind of speed and ability, everyone seems to think he's that kind of game-changing receiver. I mean, the Jets don't currently have anyone who can just line up across from a great corner and beat them, do they?
No. No.
And that's not what Crowder does. Berrios isn't burning everybody. Like, they haven't had that. A guy you can just line up and go beat someone, which also draws attention everywhere else.
Now, Mike Tannenbaum was on with DCR, and you could hear them every Monday through Friday from 5 to 8. That's our new local morning show, DPH, Canty, and Rothenberg. And Tannenbaum said the Jets should be willing to give up anyone for Deshaun Watson.
If I'm on the phone with Houston, Nick Caserio, I'm not getting off the phone. Because if I have to throw in Quinnen Williams, who's a great young player, I'm going to do that. Because in 20 years, you may not find Deshaun Watson. You could always find a good defensive lineman. You could go find a second or third round pick. But if I'm on the phone and I have a chance to get Deshaun Watson, I'm not getting off without a deal.
Wow. See, that's surprising to me. And that was the one player that Robert Saleh brought up when we spoke to him, how good he thinks Quinnen Williams is. You just can't give away everything. I mean, I would love to have Deshaun Watson. I'd be willing to give up draft capital.
Well, we said this before.
Everything, you're going to have to replace Quinnen Williams then.
But that's what I'm saying. So then you're starting over with just Deshaun Watson. You're the New York Watsons.
Yeah.
And you're giving up the draft capital. So where are you getting it? You're hoping you can just fill in the pieces from the leftover free agents that are around?
Amazing.
I don't know.
Now, Tannenbaum was asked by the guys, is Darnold's value as a trade chip now hurt because of all the people, the veteran quarterbacks that are now available on the trade market? Here's Tannenbaum.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help, but I'll say this. You know, when you look at the quarterbacks in the draft, and take, for example, someone like Trey Lance. Trey Lance is a really interesting prospect from North Dakota State, but he played in one game this year. And if I needed a quarterback and I could have Trey Lance who played in one game or Sam Darnold, I'm going to go with Sam Darnold. So I think this is going to be a really interesting offseason when you factor in the opt-outs, no combine. There's going to be a lot less information. So I think, while initially it may hurt the Jets, it could help Sam Darnold. It could help somebody like Jameis Winston who wants to be a starter again. And I think there's going to be some of these players in college that are going to be hurt with all the uncertainty, be it the opt-out, be it no combine. You're just dealing with much more uncertainty in the draft. And I think some of these veteran players will be helped by that.
It just scares me that when you hear, you know, Matthew Stafford, who I think is a stud quarterback that's been in a bad situation for a long time in Detroit, might get a low first, high second. The Lions might get for him. Well, Matthew Stafford is four times at this point the quarterback that Sam Darnold is. So if the Jets trade Sam Darnold, it's not like they're going to get a huge amount of draft capital.
No.
They're just not. So that's problematic as well. You'd be giving away a guy that you picked with the third pick in the draft. Now, Joe Douglas doesn't have any, you know, thing to make up for that pick. He didn't make the pick. But still, you don't want to give away something that at one point cost a lot of money. Like, oh, take my Lamborghini for $5. You want to get some of the money back. Now, throwing everything else into flux is what Aaron Rodgers said after the game on Sunday, where he kind of left it up in the air. You know, maybe I'm not going to be back here, but not in so many words. I said that was just a very frustrated, gutted player who said at the point, you know, he wasn't in control of his emotions at that point. He's feeling so down after the long season. Well, he was on, Aaron was, with Pat McAfee on his show, and he kind of recalibrated what he said. Listen to A-Rod here.
In general, that's a weird way to look at it. You know, you start talking about leverage and different things. I don't know. The only leverage I feel like that I have is the way I play, and that speaks for itself. Thanks to Tom Fanning. Like, I did see, you know, some of these comments being made, and I don't want to go through them one by one and talk about, you know, the falsehoods being said out there, but I haven't even had the conversations yet. Look, this is day two. Yesterday was exit meetings, and so I had my meetings with my quarterback coach and offense coordinator, and you say goodbye to your teammates and stuff, and then you start to clean your locker out, but I'm around this week, so I'm not like jetting out of town and sayonara Green Bay. Like, there's conversations to be had. I'm going to have them with the right people, but it's the same conversation we have every single year. You know, there's nothing big, you know, I'm going to come to the table with, you know, I need this and this and this. Like, we have honest conversations about where we're at every single year, and whether that's with Brian, Matt, Mark, I've had these conversations for years. I think it's part of like being a leader on the squad and having a pulse of the team and the direction that we're going. And we'll have the same conversations we do every year.
I'd be stunned if he's anywhere but Green Bay next year, Peter. Absolutely stunned.
Me too. I don't even quite understand what we're doing here. I don't
He kind of left it open.
But I just don't understand why.
Because he was just gutted.
I understand being gutted, but what does that do from a financial standpoint? It's not like he's not being taken care of. It's not like this team isn't built to win. They're obviously capable of being there. In fact, you could argue they were one bad coaching decision from being in the Super Bowl, potentially.
Right.
So I just don't understand the game we're playing. Yeah, I mean, I haven't asked Ballard about this. I'd be curious because he's such a obsessed Rodgers fan. But this isn't a little bit annoying? Just to even, are we going to play a game like this? But no one thinks they're going to start. No one thinks that Jordan Love is challenging him for the job.
Well, here's what it does, though. It gives Rodgers, I believe, and he said his talent is his leverage, and that's true. But other leverages, if he wants out. As you said, Jordan Love is not ready to take over, and Green Bay would take a huge step back. All of a sudden, it'd be a bad team in an NFL outpost. I mean, it's all nice, you know, the pageantry of Lambeau Field, but you're still in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It has to be a good team to. I mean, Reggie White kind of remade that team into a place that you want to go. So by Rodgers kind of hinting the way he did, I don't think that he was being strategic. because he was in such a bad way after the game. But it allows him to go to manager. This is what we need. This is what we need to do. This is what I want to have done for me to stay here. So it gives him some power.
That's true. That part does make sense. I just don't know how much they need, but you know, they need some. They certainly couldn't get the Bucks off the field.
They need
in a lot of situations.
Defense.
Yeah, I. No matter how much people will praise the, you know, the Smiths, and they have a few things on that defense, they need more. That is true.
I mean, they've got a great wide receiver now, and Tonyan's a really good tight end. Yeah, I guess they could use a little bit more of a running game, but I think they've got enough offensively for sure. But you know, the defense has to be able to stop people. Has to be able to get Tom Brady off the field when you've got the three timeouts, and they couldn't do it. And a holding call certainly helped out.
I'll tell you what, though, I got to say it. On this show, at least I said, and I think you were with me, a couple of years ago, it started to feel like Rodgers was turning to the other side. It did not feel that way this year.
What do you mean turning to the other side?
Starting to just make the turn downhill. And I did not see that this year. I saw a guy who was just sitting at the peak kind of his game.
Couple of our listeners, Calvin Ridley, 6'1", 190. Tyreek Hill, 5'10", 185.
But is Tyreek Hill a player you take second overall?
That's the key.
He's great. He's not a second overall pick.
That's the key. Obviously, you'd love Tyreek Hill on your team, but if he was available with the second pick of the draft, would you do it?
Because I got news for you. You could trade. If that's the standard you're looking for, then guess what? You could trade your number one overall pick and go get other players, including a Tyreek Hill level player, potentially. Now, he's special, but let's remember, Tyreek Hill, fifth round, Michael.
Yep.
So you can trade that number two overall pick and try to find a Tyreek Hill and try to find an offensive line need and try to find a linebacker need. There's so many things you could do rather than use that pick if you don't believe that Devontae Smith is straight up earth-shattering for an offense. Because if he's not, then I think you probably are better off having the capital and getting more pieces, because this is a team with needs.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. And good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. So today, I was reading through a lot of stuff, and I saw that Iona basketball coach Rick Pitino actually had COVID-19. He's 68 years old, and nine players on his team have had it. I mean, they've had these 2 and 3 week pauses in their season. So I said to Andrew, see if you could get Rick on. So Rick's going to join us at 4 o'clock to talk about that. And in terms of talking about college basketball, my alma mater, Fordham University, got rid of its head coach, Jeff Neubauer, who's never a good fit. I don't want to see people lose their jobs. He was never a good fit. I think he had 60 wins in 6 years there. He never did anything. They should have kept Tom Pecora. But it was a bad fit. It's a guy, I think he's from Kentucky, didn't have any recruiting connections here in New York at all. And I've said this over and over and over again, and I know that I'm biased because that's where my diploma's from. That's a sleeping giant. That team is in the Atlantic 10. If a team like St. Bonaventure could be a contender and make the NCAA tournament in the Atlantic 10, then Fordham University damn well could as well. Now, either they hire a big-time coach and make a big-time move, or get out of the Atlantic 10 and go to the Patriot League where they don't have to worry about these things. But if you're going to play with the big boys, don't go out and hire Jeff Neubauer. It doesn't make sense. I've already put in my recommendation for a guy like Fran Fraschilla, who works for ESPN. He's won in New York. He knows how to recruit. All these years on TV, all these kids around the country know him. And New York's not going to scare him. That's what they should be thinking. Don't try to uncover the next great coach, because you could swing and miss. Get a guy who's been there and done that. Fraschilla has done that. This is an important hire for Fordham. Either they make the right hire or go away from the Atlantic 10. You can't play with the big boys if you make a bad hire again. You can't. You can't continue to win 2 or 3 games in the Atlantic 10 every single year. It's an embarrassment to the university. Why can't Fordham be what St. John's is? Why? Why can't they be what St. Bonaventure is? Why can't they be what Dayton is? Stop it. It's all excuses. It's all right there. They're a team in New York City in a big conference, and you can't win? You continue to embarrass yourself every year sending out bad teams with bad coaches? Time to step up. So they fire Neubauer today. Let's see what their next move is, because it's going to be the move that will define whether or not this university stays in a big-time basketball conference. If you can't get a big-time coach, then drop down to a lower level, because you had your most success in the last 20, 30 years in the Patriot League anyway. And then you decided to get big, puff out your chest, and go to the Atlantic 10, but you didn't follow that with a big-time hire. 1-800-919-3776. So Rick Pitino will join us at 4. Keyshawn Johnson in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to give away the Inside the Huddle contest, which is great. That's coming up in just a moment. I think we'll do it twice today. We get to hang with Chris Canty and Bart Scott and Bob Wischusen.
Beautiful.
Right before the Super Bowl. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. So settle in. We have got a great, great show on tap. I'm told that Devontae Smith is at the Senior Bowl. He declined to be measured today. He'll wait until Alabama's pro day for that. So either he expects to grow or eat a lot.
Do you know what? Put in that work, bud.
Have some pizza tonight.
Hit the buffet. Hit the sizzler.
Oh, yeah. Kay, LaGreca to come. Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Let's go back to the phones. Let's do that. Let's go to Dino in the Bronx. Dino.
Hello?
Hello, Dino.
Hey, what's up, Michael? I just wanted to say something really quick. I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a Red Sox fan, to be specific. And lately, man, like, analytics have been ruining the whole game. Like, it's sad. Like, nobody throws complete games anymore. Like, I don't see sacrifice bunts or squeeze. I don't see hit and runs. And then it's like, once the starter goes out, you got, like, five people coming in there to throw to a couple batters. And it's like, they're taking a lot of the excitement out of the game. And also, like, you got a lefty coming up. Like, all right, maybe Nelson Cruz. You're just going to throw everybody to the right side of the field just because he's a lefty? Like, come on. Like, a lot of this stuff is ruining the game that I love, man.
Well, Nelson Cruz is a righty.
And ratings are going down.
Well, okay, Dino. A lot of people feel like this. That's the way the game is. They either they find another way to play the game. The people with the analytics have figured out this is the most effective way to win. And you know what? The people with the best analytics usually win. The Dodgers have a great analytics team. They win. The Houston Astros had a great analytics team. They won. They cheated a little bit, but they won. The Yankees always are there. They have an unbelievable analytics team. It's not an accident, everybody. So
Nationals did it differently.
Who did?
Nationals.
Nationals did. Nationals won against the trend. Tampa, the two teams in the World Series last year, all analytics. Both of their managers driven by analytics. So if you don't like it, a lot of people don't like it. But that is the most effective way to win. Let's go to Rob in Massachusetts. Rob.
Hi, Michael. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Good, Michael. I've been a Jets fan a long, long time, and I used to listen to the games in the 60s with Joe Namath and all, Merle Haim and Sam DeLuca on WABC. And Joe had some troubles his first two or three years. And I think if we stick with Sam and get that Devontae Smith out of Alabama for a nice weapon for Sam, plus you got Perriman, Crowder, Mims, and then get to use the rest of the draft free agents on the defense, I don't think we need a quarterback. I think Sam's good. You got to give him a chance. He hasn't had many weapons. He's been injured. He had the mono, you know. You got to give him a chance. Get that Devontae Smith out of Alabama. He's like a Michael Irvin and an Otis Taylor all put into one.
But Rob, who's better, Sam Darnold or Deshaun Watson?
I'm not a big Deshaun Watson fan. I know he's good, but I'd take that Baltimore quarterback in a heartbeat. But, you're going to give up the farm for Deshaun Watson. Right. And then, you know, you can get that guy from Alabama. He is a stud.
I understand, but you have to have a quarterback that you think is going to be able to get the ball to him. I mean, give him a chance. Sam Darnold's been the quarterback of the Jets for 3 years. And you can make the argument that this was the least impressive year of all. And you could put some of the blame on Adam Gase, whatever. Yeah, he deserves a lot of the blame. But no less an authority than Steve Young has come on this air and said that great players, they can play through bad coaching. So far, we have not seen that with Sam. I think Sam has the potential to be good, but we know Deshaun Watson is great. He's not just good, Peter. He's great. Yeah, that's why you have to give up so much for him.
That guy lost me when he said he'd go with Lamar Jackson over Deshaun. And there may be other people would feel that. I mean, the guy's an MVP, but Deshaun Watson's the total package. Deshaun Watson is not a guy you rely on just to run. He does every single thing well, and he performed well this year on a team that was not good and was the strong suit of that team. So, I mean, Deshaun Watson's a proven commodity. You could be a fan or not, but just go look. If you go look at the stats right now, there's not really much of a choice for you.
Congratulations to Jason Batis from East Atlantic Beach. He's our first winner of the day for the Inside the Huddle contest. So we'll have another opportunity a little bit later on. Let's go to Chris in Manhattan. Chris.
Hey, good afternoon, Michael and Peter. You just hit me with something with Steve Young. That something about that I'm going to say this respectfully. Did he feel that way in Tampa Bay? Because the Tampa Bay situation might be a little bit closer to what Sam Darnold could be dealing with.
We asked him that, Chris, and he said that he was told by coaches, you're going to be a great player in this league. Don't let this bring you down. And you know, he showed enough that no less a football factory than the San Francisco 49ers wanted him. So, he stunk with Tampa Bay, but he didn't stink as bad as we've seen now.
Yeah, no, but I think both situations are comparable. I don't want to get stuck on the Steve Young thing because I'd rather talk about number two. If you the scenario being if you stick with Sam Darnold,
right?
I'm gonna have a DMX moment if you take Devontae Smith at two.
You're gonna lose your mind.
Yeah, you already know. Okay, why? You're still going to have some of the same problem because you got to remember two out of the first 3 years of Sam Darnold's career, he had the absolute worst offensive line in football. So now when we say, well, the offensive line has been upgraded, yeah, from the worst to, okay, they're not bad, okay?
Right.
Kai
yep.
Becton is a stud. I like Sam, but you're gonna need some interior offensive linemen. One of them should come in free agency if you can get it. That number two pick, I would trade down and get a haul, and I would probably be looking, again, offensive line. And I had spoken to your producer. One of the things you might want to look at, because everybody's talking about Penei Sewell,
right.
See Daniel Jeremiah, because he has Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern ranked ahead of Penei Sewell, and if I'm not mistaken, Rashawn Slater has some versatility where he can kick inside. So if you were to sign, let's just say a Thuney or a Scherf, and then you get something like a Rashawn Slater with your first round pick. Look at that line now.
Oh, okay, now, I hear what you're saying about the line, Chris. But
yes.
he's got to have skill position players. Now I'm not saying Tank Smith with the second pick. But you're going to build a line. He has no running game, none, and he doesn't have any great wide receiver. So they're blocking for a guy who has nothing to do with the ball. The hesitation I would have with taking Sewell is that when you take the second pick in the draft and you're going to take an offensive line, you want a left tackle. That's the most important guy on your line with a right-handed quarterback. Well, if you take Sewell with the number two pick, either Becton or Sewell is not going to be the left tackle. They're going to be right tackle. You want to pick a right tackle with the second pick in the draft? Yeah, you might have bookends for the next 12 years, and that'd be great, but that's a little bit of a gamble too. That's why Joe Douglas has some heavy lifting to do this offseason, because there's so many ways he could go, and there's so many ways he could mess it up, and there's so many ways he could set the Jets up for the long haul. Not going to be easy. Any pick he makes, going to be criticized, scrutinized. We understand that. He understands that. And even if he trades all of those picks to get Deshaun Watson, he's going to be scrutinized and criticized about that too. You gave everything away. Well, you have a great quarterback. What else do you have? He's got some money in free agency under the cap that he can use. But if you trade away all that upper draft capital, that puts more pressure on you as a GM to find jewels with the third round pick, the fourth round pick, the fifth round pick. That's what you have to do. And that's not easy to do. Well, Rick Pitino revealed today that he was quarantined in a small apartment right off campus, did not go back to his house because he didn't want to get his wife sick, and he had COVID-19. A lot of his team has had it, too. They've been shut down twice. How do they move forward? So we thought it'd be interesting to talk to Rick Pitino, and he's going to join us in just a moment. So stick around for that. We think that should be interesting. It's Kay Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Michael Kay Show.
Donnie is back. How you doing, bud?
Oh, very good. And you? You guys sound good. Great. Glad that you were able to hold down the fort.
It's tough without you, though.
It's a lot of space. It's 70%.
So you're going to buy into that garbage as well. It's a proper amount. It's, I think, probably where it should be, around 30%.
I think it's closer to 50.
Well, it should be 33 and a third for all
of
us,
Peter's
right?
Well, Peter's at about 12.
This is the legitimate breakdown, if you want it. If you want the truth, I'll tell you the truth. Don, 45, Michael, 35, me, 20.
On. I talk more than Michael, really.
Yeah.
The Michael Kay Show.
Everybody that listens needs a Don injection.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Truer words never spoken.
Wow.
What a show today. What a show. If you didn't get a chance to hear it live, get your backside to the podcast and listen to the Rick Pitino interview. He was great, really great. Talk about bad timing, though, Peter. He gets the vaccine, and then 8 days later gets the virus.
I know.
Now, I've read from a lot of doctors that if you get the vaccine in your system, you will probably not get hospitalized if you get it, but you still have a chance to get it until you get both vaccines over that amount of time that you're supposed to.
Well, and then they think after you get both vaccines, you won't even get it?
95% chance you won't get it, which is better than the flu shot.
Got it. So it's not even that you won't get sick. It's that you're 95% chance you won't even get it.
Right.
Which is fine, right? I mean, I think we could all accept getting the flu, but you just don't want to get to the point where you have to go to the hospital or, God forbid, a ventilator. So, I mean, if you're going to get sick and you stay out of the hospital, I mean,
I will say, though,
considering what's been going on, I guess you take that as a win, right?
One thing that bothered me consistently in the conversation about COVID, though, was when people compared it to the flu, and in doing so made it sound like the flu's nothing, which is spoken by someone who has not had a bad bout of the flu.
Right.
Because the flu can be awful as well. I'm not saying it's COVID, but a bad bout with flu is brutal.
Well, the one... there's not many positive offshoots of this. People are masking up, so the flu has gone way down this year. Way down. So that's a good thing.
All right, I might stay with the mask. It might stick around.
Yeah, why not? They do it in Japan. Let's talk baseball. Shall we?
Shall we?
So right before we got on the air, the Phillies signed JT Realmuto to a 5-year, $115.5 million contract. So that's $23 million a year. That's the highest average annual value of a catcher ever. Now, this is a guy that turned down, I think, 5 years, 110 at spring training because he was looking for 5 years, $200 million. That didn't happen. So the Phillies are back in play in the National League East. They didn't let one of their best players leave. And he's that good. So now the National League East becomes a four-team race. And the 19 games you play against the Marlins are not going to be layups. That is going to be a very difficult division to win and to come out of as a wild card. Now, they might change, but as of this point, the players turned down the universal DH for the expanded playoffs. Maybe they revisit it. Remember, we got the expanded playoffs once the season started last year. But right now, there's no expanded playoffs, so that's going to make it very difficult to get one of those, I guess it would be two wild card spots. Three division winners, two wild cards from each league.
Right, which means no way a fourth place team gets in.
No, impossible. Literally impossible. So, and now you've got the National League West with the Dodgers and the Padres being killers. So you would assume one of those teams is a wild card. So there's probably one wild card coming out of the East. I don't think the wild card will come out of the Central. Now, the Central can beat up on each other and get fat because it's not a very good division. Which leads us to the other story. It's being reported throughout baseball circles that the Mets have made an offer to Trevor Bauer. No one knows what the number is, but they have an offer made to Trevor Bauer. And Trevor Bauer, through his many social media outbursts and his agent, Rachel Luba, has pretty much said that he wanted a higher average annual value than Gerrit Cole, who he was teammates with on the UCLA team. And they're very strong vibes that they don't like each other. That's beside the point. And the way I look at it, you know, when we talked about this earlier, Don wasn't with us, so I'm very intrigued to get his take. If I don't think he's a $36 million a year pitcher. To me, he's not Gerrit Cole, because Gerrit Cole has a consistency over the last 4 years. And I know that Chris Carlin's going to talk about this on his show at 7 o'clock, leading you into the Nick pregame show. But this guy's been in the big league 6 years. He's had 1.5 good years. Now, fortunately for him, he won the Cy Young in 2020 in a 60-game season. And although I think he's a terrific pitcher, let's temper that just a little bit and see if you follow me, guys. The National League Central last year was a joke. And the American League Central wasn't all that great. That's who Bauer pitched against. But his numbers are amazing. 1.73, 41 hits in 73 innings. A whip, walks and hits per innings pitch, a .795. Well under one. Can he keep that up? That was in 11 starts last year. So my question is, if you're the Mets, you're going to give him $36 million? I don't see how you can. With $36 million, he makes more per year than Jacob DeGrom, who's a much better pitcher than him, and has been, and has been consistent. Now, you can't worry about that, because Jacob signed his contract when he signed his contract. But he does have an opt-out the end of 2022. I just think that when you look at Trevor Bauer, he's not getting a Gerrit Cole deal. He's not getting 9 years at $36 million a year. Would there be a team out there that would give him 2 years at 72? Maybe. Maybe that would be the Mets. Would he take a two-year $30 million deal? Or $70 million deal at 35 a year? I don't know, Don. Of the things they need, because they're supposedly very much in play for the third baseman from the Cubs making a trade to get Chris Bryant. The way their pitching is now with Santana and DeGrom and Stroman and Peterson and whoever will be the fifth starter before Syndergaard comes back, do they really have to invest their funds in Trevor Bauer? What do you think?
Well, let's think about it. Your number one starter is going to be DeGrom, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if you went and got Bauer, I guess he would be your number two until Syndergaard came back.
He'd mm-hmm. still be your number two even with Syndergaard.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Why?
He won the Cy Young.
So what? Would he have won the Cy Young if he ended up like tripling the amount of starts? If he played a...
I don't know.
Well, he
pitched great.
Am I misreading his stats and seeing that he was really great in 2018 and the short in 2020 and that's it?
That's it.
And you're so sure that guy jumps ahead of Syndergaard?
He's the type of guy, again, I'm just telling you what's been said in baseball. He's a baseball scientist. He has learned how to increase his spin rate, become a better pitcher. He does very controversial training methods. He has made himself this pitcher. So he's thought of in baseball as a top flight pitcher.
Okay, but to Peter's point, he wants to get paid as much as Cole. Cole's got a career earned run average of 319 to Bauer's 390.
Right.
And the whip career, 1.265 for Bauer, 1.119 for Cole. Cole's been the better pitcher.
Cole's a better pitcher.
The one thing going for Bauer is you said that was a weak division offensively, but it's a bandbox that he pitches in Cincinnati. Listen, he's a good pitcher. But, you know, whatever. So you get Bauer. He can be your number two. You got Syndergaard coming back. But Syndergaard's not going to come back until, what, May or June, right? Carrasco.
That would be your bet, yeah.
Mats. You know, listen, it strengthens their rotation. But at $36 million per, does it guarantee you anything?
Right, and then if you get Chris Bryant, too, you soar past 210. Now, again, it's Steve Cohen's money, not mine. But you're going to have to sign Conforto at the end of this year, too, if you want him.
I don't want to steal Carlin's thunder, but he did tweet this earlier today. Did he give Bauer a one-year deal? Now, I don't know if Bauer would take it. Would you give him, like, that $36 million for 1 year? Does he take that, or is somebody else going to give him more than the 1 year? Because for 1 year, then it doesn't affect Conforto, and then if he pitches great, you keep him. If not, then you let him go in free agency.
Number years have always been bad. So if he takes a one-year deal and then has a terrible season on a good team, that wouldn't be productive for him to get in a long-term deal.
It's interesting. It's not a slam dunk.
No, it's hard.
Because Peter makes a good point. Listen, last year was special. You're talking about an earned run average under two. But again, he was 5-4 because his team couldn't hit. But what would that end up being after, you know, he's a guy that made what? Like, I got to look how many starts
12
he made.
12 starts, I think. 12 yeah, or 11.
12 starts. He would have made another 20 starts at least.
He did pitch well in the playoffs against the Braves, I think, right? I think he had he lost, but he pitched very well.
That's a good pitcher, but am I paying him $36 million?
Now, you can ask for whatever you want. Remember, Realmuto wanted $40 million a year. He ended up getting $23. You could ask. This is a very different time, everybody. You could ask for whatever you want. This is not the same market where Gerrit Cole got $36 million. You know why Gerrit Cole got a 9-year, $36 million deal? Because other teams wanted him, too. How many people are bidding on Trevor Bauer? How many people can afford it? How many people could afford it at $36 million?
He brings a lot. There's a lot there besides what he does on the field. And when you look at what he does on the field, I mean, guys, I'm no baseball number cruncher, but unless we've now learned that what he did in half a season last year is going to be who he is, and that's way more true of who he is than the previous 6 years, how could you justify that number? And I staunchly disagree with Michael that he would jump ahead of Syndergaard in the rotation.
Well, I mean, you'd get a guy, Syndergaard, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery. I have no idea what he is.
I'm just saying, if we assume that Syndergaard returns to being Syndergaard. You look at Syndergaard, and listen, I feel like Johnny Lawrence and Cobra Kai looking at a computer here, because I look at old school baseball stats. I'm looking at stats that make sense to me. But looking at the stats that make sense to me, Syndergaard is a better, more consistent pitcher. And on top of that, he's a built-in part of the fabric of this team.
Again, better career whip. Better career earn run average for Syndergaard. Now, both of them hadn't had much luck as far as wins and losses are concerned because it does get a lot of support. And Syndergaard did not have a great 2019 with a 4.28. But now coming off of Tommy John, he's still a guy that, you know, 3.3, 3.03 in 18, 2.97 in 2017. Whips that were very comparable to. Just barely over one in 2016 when he was an all-star. Listen,
you know, where you line up in the rotation means nothing until the playoffs. Everybody's going to get 32 starts.
Right.
It's the guy who's going to start the second game after DeGrom.
And Syndergaard's postseason, he's 2-1 with a 2.42 earned run average.
And had a great game in the World Series against the Royals.
Yeah, 26 innings, 36 strikeouts, 11 walks. But whatever, that's a nice dilemma to have, right? Who's my third starter? Is it Syndergaard or Bauer? But you're paying through the nose for it. All right, so he doesn't get 36. What's he going to get? 30?
Yeah, it's going to be up there. You know. I mean, there's a top-flight starter. And now, again, I don't know if this matters. He's very, very – I'm trying to come up with the right word. Very antagonistic on social media.
He's a bit much.
And I don't know if that's going to play in New York. You already have a guy who's very outspoken on social media in Stroman. Now you're going to go to the 10th degree
with too,
Bauer. Yeah, Syndergaard. Syndergaard's not as – I mean, Stroman seems angry all the time at people, that people are always going at. Syndergaard seems more fun. Bauer is kind of outrageous on social media. Does that work? And Ken Davidoff of the Post brought up a good point. You just got rid of your GM because of the unconscionable things he did, not on social media, but by texting. If you look, there's a history with Trevor Bauer. He went after a college student, a young lady, countless texts, and kind of sent, he's got an army of tweeters that he sends against people that disagree with him, and it gets ugly. I mean, will that disqualify him from the Mets? I mean, Ken thought that it should. I don't know. I mean, in this world, what does that really
mean?
Well,
we outlined it the day that Porter was fired. There's different rules for players as opposed to executives. But I get what he's saying is that really, you know, the first transaction you want to make after letting Porter go, a guy that's also got a history of some questionable tweets. He's all over social media. He had like a Yankee hat on the other day because he's mostly fun, but he's – and what was it? You told the story. He's the one with the – What did he have? Why am I vegging on the the drone. What was the drone thing?
No,
story,
he cut his
Michael?
Hand on a drone before the Indians playoffs.
He's
a different bird. He's
not a bad guy.
Like
I said, he's a bit
player.
Much. He's a bit much.
He's not your typical York, baseball player.
With the New York, if he goes out there and pitches lights out, they're not going to care about. The second you start losing, all that then turns on you. So I don't like it just from the standpoint of not the optic. I don't like it because what it does is put pressure on you, because now you have to perform, because you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt when you're that out there on social media, when you're that engaging with the fans, when you're that engaging with the press in that way, that, you know, the second you start losing a bunch of games in a row, that blows back up in your face. Not saying I wouldn't get them. I'm just saying that's, you know, when you start
if
putting the pros
said
and
to me,
cons, it's a click in the con column.
Do you want Trevor Bauer and it fits into your salary structure, says, yeah, bring him on. I mean, the guy can pitch, but there's more to it than that. Let's go to Derek in West New something. I don't know. West New York. What's up, Derek?
Hey, West New York, New Jersey, right outside the Lincoln Tunnel.
All right. What do you got, man?
So I had a pretty interesting story when I was younger with Curt Schilling to kind of, I don't know, defend his character, because I don't really agree with the things he said, but I was about 8, my brother was about 10, and we went to a Yankee game. I think Curt Schilling was on the Phillies. And he came over, he started signing autographs, and he signed my baseball, and then somebody called him over, and he started running towards the field. And my dad, from about 5 rows away, said, hey, Curt, you just signed his brother's ball. His brother's standing right next to him. If you don't sign it, there's going to be war in my house. And Curt Schilling turned around, smiled at my father, ran back, and he signed my brother's ball, and then he went on his way. But he was already a good amount away for him to turn around, hear my father, and then come sign my brother's ball. I don't know. It stuck with me as a child.
And it should. It should. I mean, you know, there's different sides to people. But as a teammate, he was never beloved per se. He's a little different.
We had him on. What Super Bowl was it?
We used to have him on a weekly, I think. We had him on as a weekly.
Yeah, when he was working at ESPN, right?
Yeah.
But I remember we physically had him like on set at the Super Bowl. I believe it was in San Francisco. And he was talking to us before because he was plugging the whole video game thing. And he just seemed very nice, down-to-earth guy. But the problem with him is he's kind of like a binge drinker, right? Because once it starts to get political and once the opinions start flying, he can't stop. And he gets himself into some real, real trouble and says some really damaging and hateful things. So, yeah, I'm not surprised he signed your autograph. I'm not surprised that at times he could be very engaging and be a nice guy. But there's evidence up and down, Peter, right, that when he starts going down that wormhole, some really ugly things come out. Really ugly.
Well, I mean,
it goes beyond politics.
I've always said that on this show for the last few years since he got fired from me, and he's been a subject. It's not about the political part of it. There are plenty of people who have political opinions, and people don't consider punishing them professionally. He's been hateful and vitriolic many times. And I don't know, to me, the timing of him coming out and supporting the insurrection at the Capitol right before this plays, it's just, I mean, the guy does not care. He just doesn't care.
And also, and this is what got him fired at ESPN, he also likes to push the envelope. And, like, if you tell him not to do something, you're almost giving him permission to do it. So I would be worried, like, his induction speech. He could say, well, we'll talk to him ahead of time, edit his. No, that's just when he probably would go over the deep end. Because he knew what he was doing at ESPN. He was told not to do it, did it anyway.
Hey, we should take the time before we take a break, because we have Keyshawn coming up next, to wish hockey's biggest star, Wayne Gretzky. Happy 60th birthday. Wayne Gretzky is 60.
I know, it's crazy. He's forever young to me.
Yeah, it's kind
of
weird.
He is one of those guys.
Story out today, because you know my hamburger with him, which will live in infamy. Can't wait to tell Marco and Jalen when they understand the significance of it. But, you know, last year, I'm fortunate enough to walk out of the building with Dave Maloney and Wayne Gretzky. And I'm trying to soak in anything he says, anything he talks about hockey. He starts rattling off, Peter, you need a great player to win. You know, Pittsburgh had Mario, right? Washington has Ovechkin. You know, Chicago had Kane and Taves. Like, start rattling them all off. Guy Lafleur with Montreal. He gets to Edmonton and says, Curry and Messier. He didn't include himself. Like, that's what's so great about him. That even in just a couple of people, and he didn't say, oh, you know, you had me, you had Mess, you had Curry. He didn't include himself.
And then he put his arm around Don's shoulders. He's got a burger, buddy.
That didn't happen.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Please. Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky is, in his sport, the unquestionable, no conversation, greatest who ever played. Who else is like that throughout all of sports?
Ruth? Ruth in baseball?
Not according to Adam Ottavino.
Right. But I'm just saying, Michael, he hit more home runs than teams did.
Right.
When he played. So you want to talk about stats.
And his name is synonymous with baseball almost in the way Gretzky is with hockey.
Right.
But besides that, there's no football one. We'll argue it. There's not even a. I mean, I guess Jordan to basketball is pretty close. Basketball is pretty close.
But you can argue LeBron.
Right.
Right, but most people will land on Jordan.
Football, they throw in Jerry Rice or Jim Brown.
And now Brady.
Yep.
Yeah, Brady might be that guy when it's all said and done.
Don, does anyone who knows anything about hockey argue against Gretzky?
Some of the old school guys will say Orr. Because Orr was scoring like 100 points as a defenseman when nobody ever thought it was even possible.
All right, Keyshawn's going to join us next, so let's stay tuned for that. This portion of the K-Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes, 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.